America's ready to get back to work, but to win in the new economy, you need every advantage to succeed. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. With NetSuite, you'll have visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need, all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite lets you manage every penny with precision. You'll have the agility to compete with anyone, work from anywhere, and run your whole company right from your phone. Join over 20,000 companies who trust NetSuite to make it happen. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide, 7 actions businesses need to take now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/Golic. Get your free guide and schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Golic. That's netsuite.com/Golic.
This is the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio and ESPN2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Our phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. Is it just me, or does it feel like it's Wednesday for the third time this week already?
Yeah, it's the week is going long, but what I'm doing is I am trying new things out. We do the DraftKings. We have our fun during the football season and the group we have doing that. I'm going to give it a guy. Keep reading the reads for DraftKings and the golf. I'm setting my golf lineup.
Oh, there
Get
we go.
Get my golf lineup going.
You're
going
to jump into the fray
on this. Yeah, I'm going to jump in there. I feel I can be dominant in that. Actually, I have no idea if I can or not. I'll probably get crushed, but it looks like it's a lot of fun to
you. You're going to get ready to put a lot of money on Bryson DeChambeau?
Bryson DeChambeau.
You got to back the Bryson. It's that or Brooks Koepka-Cow. So one of the two show heroes around here for that. That's interesting. I like that idea as a slump buster, though. It feels like a Wednesday from March, back when the world was moving at the rate of sludge or honey or molasses, and so you're going to gamble your way through it.
Well, you know, you got to find something to amuse yourself, huh?
I'm convinced, and you brought this to my attention, Junior, and God bless you for being this smart. I'm convinced that's why the stock market is doing what it's doing, because all the sports bettors are just betting on stocks now.
They're doing their own thing, right?
They can't bet on sports, so they're just throwing all this into the stock market, see if they can make some cash.
I have this disposable income. Let me go play the market for a little bit.
I mean, listen, there's a lot of similarities is all I'm saying, which is all the more reason we need to get sports back, because I cannot stomach trying to read more financial news and make sense of it right now. I have spent a lot more time around sports. I would like to gamble on the things that I know about.
I think what's great is some of the amateur investors are making a little bit of money. They're going, this isn't hard.
Yeah. Talk to me in 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah. This is hard.
It's easy.
We
got a lot to get to this morning, including an incredible lengthy document that came out from the NBA on the procedures and protocols going forward for the bubble in Orlando. My favorite one is Woj dug this one up. You can play singles ping pong, but not doubles ping pong, because that would break social distancing barriers.
Damn, sad Forrest Gump vibes.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
I think one of the best line was, can you call it a memo when it's over 100 pages?
No, that's a book.
It's like it's a book.
Jerry Maguire.
His mission statement.
That's borderline manifesto.
It's the Old Testament is what it is. We'll get to that a little bit later, but we're still trying to deal with baseball, trying to save itself from itself, and whether or not this is ever going to get together. It is just ridiculously depressing that we're still having this conversation for the sport that could have been and should have been the first one on the field to get things back and going, but they just cannot get out of their own way. And Eduardo Perez, who's a friend of the show, done great stuff for us, was on Get Up, and basically right now he put it in the best possible terms. It's not about who's going to win. It's about, can we win by getting the game back on the field?
My biggest concern in all of this is, yes, I know that the commissioner was hired and is paid by the owners, but he's there for the best interest of the game. And I think that when I was in the union, that was always my concern. Make sure that the commissioner is in the best interest of the game. And yesterday, it just didn't feel, in this past few weeks, it hasn't felt like he's in the best interest of the game in general. Let's not forget, our biggest assets as fans is watching the players on the field. It's not watching the owners on the field. Yes, they're the ones that pay the paychecks, but but the players are the biggest asset and the main attraction for us to be able to enjoy the game. And that, to me, should be the biggest importance that Rob Manfred has to have right now. And his biggest interest should be, how do we get baseball back?
So is that the final hammer to lay down, that the commissioner has the power to do what's in the best interest of the game? Because right now, from the March agreement, he has the right to impose any number of games he wants, but the talk is that the union will file that grievance, and that's why they don't want to do it. Can he go outside of that and just be, in the best interest of the game, I decree this?
I think that's at least the intent. Like Eduardo's saying what I tried to very poorly say yesterday, which is that was always kind of the sense, especially publicly, that I thought you should get from the commissioner. That's what Adam Silver does such a great job of putting people at ease with. It's the idea that the central focus of the game, the best interest of the players, and in general, the health of the sport is the priority for him. And so, yeah, maybe that's the sentiment that should drive this home. That or the players' rampant tweeting over the last 24 hours.
Well, that's the question, right? Look, we all want to believe that the commissioner is this all-powerful benefactor who looks over everything with the same care and concern, but that's normally not the case, right? I mean, he's the commissioner of any sport is hired by the owners, and we'd love for him to be, you know, oh, I see all sides equal and I see all these things through this prism of the sameness and I understand everything, when that's almost never the case.
Well, he only has to answer to one group, so yeah. he could make this, you know, say this is what we're going to do in the best interest of the game. He doesn't really have to answer to players.
No.
But he does have to answer to the owners.
Well, I don't think that's even what I'm trying to say here, though, is that he's got to answer to anybody. Is it still, as the commissioner, yes, you work for them, but in your job description, the best interest of the game is something that becomes a factor in all.
But can you do it?
Yeah.
Can you do it knowing that you would ruffle some of your owner's feathers? Because ultimately, that's what you're going to do. Ultimately, best interest of the game is going to be where most people want it to be anyway. Both sides feel like they win, but both sides lose something as well. But do you lose a pinky or do you lose an arm?
I think you've seen plenty of instances of commissioners in other sports making moves that might almost go directly against ownership if it's something that the commissioner deems important enough to going forward with the game for everyone involved in this to go ahead and go and attack.
And again, we're having this battle over money. Just like to throw in that there's this little thing called the coronavirus still out there. Did you see the article that Dr. Anthony Fauci put in the Los Angeles Times?
Yeah, do it before the winter.
Hey, guys, yeah, cool and all, but you might want to get this thing done before we play too well into October, because that's probably not going to be in your best interest.
Which bodes really well for football, as I hear.
Yeah, boy.
Listen to that out.
That's what I thought of, because you can fit a baseball season in somewhere. You can make it short enough to abide by that, if you choose to abide by that. But that's what I thought of as well, both college and the NFL. They go well past October.
Yeah. Yikes.
And here's the line. Here's the money line from Dr. Fauci in the LA Times. If the question is time, I would try to keep it in the core summer months and end it not with playing the way we play the World Series until the end of October when it's cold. I would avoid that. Okay.
Well, and so you've got that on one side, and then you've got the players. And you mentioned that the commissioner doesn't answer to the players, but he's been put in a spot right now where you will officially be the bad guy. Because the players, in all of this, this has not been very tactfully done by either side.
No.
I think we can all agree on that. Until right now.
Yeah.
The players aligning themselves with the fans is the smartest thing anyone's ever done in all this. You saw the flurry of tweets yesterday retweeting the MLBPA's message from Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, all these other guys. Tell us when and
where.
We just want to play baseball. We've said, put it in the commissioner's hands. You've got the power to do this. We want to play baseball. And whether it's a perfect instance of right and wrong on this one and the players being that isn't it anymore. They've finally understood the perception of the outside world. They've aligned themselves with the fans, throwing darts at the commissioner and the owners, saying, we know what you guys have the power to do. The outside world doesn't care that Major League Baseball's Players Association is going to file that grievance with anyone. They care that the players are like them, asking for baseball, knowing the people that can give it to them. It's the smartest thing anyone's done in this.
And it's the most fascinating 180, because it was just a couple of weeks ago, Tom Glavine wrote that article and was on with us, and he said, look, no matter what happens, the players, you are going to get blamed for this, whether it's right or wrong, about this game not being played, and somehow, in a large part because of the ineptitude of Major League Baseball, that script has been flipped and the players are running with that, and I say good for them.
Yeah, it's the loud headline to tell us when and where, and then the small print of, then we're going to sue.
Yeah.
That's why you
always, we're going to file a grievance.
That's why you always read the fine print, ladies and gentlemen, including the inability to play ping pong as doubles in the NBA mm-hmm. bubble / campus resort in Orlando. We'll have that a little bit later. But coming up, Mike Gundy did it again. Did he get it right the second time? We'll get to that after this.
Golic.
Golic and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr.
I want to apologize to all members of our team, former players, and their families for the pain and discomfort that has been caused over the last 2 days.
His reaction, I thought, was disgraceful. I just don't buy Mike Gundy saying that he's paying attention.
Tone deaf is a phrase that we're hearing more and more at this point. The concept of a coach being allowed to be tone deaf isn't real anymore. Players will call it out each and every time they see it.
Golic and Wingo with you. Glad you're with us on a Wednesday, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So, after the first video with Oklahoma State head coach Mike Gundy and running back Chuba Hubbard came out, obviously it wasn't enough. And Mike Gundy said he had a meeting with his team and learned some things. And then he came out with a completely different video yesterday.
Yeah, by himself.
By himself. Staring into the camera, it was about a minute long, so we want to play for you now the entire Mike Gundy second attempt at trying to get this right. Here he is.
I had a great meeting with our team today. Our players expressed their feelings as individuals and as team members. They helped me see through their eyes how the T-shirt affected their hearts. Once I learned how that network felt about Black Lives Matter, I was disgusted and knew it was completely unacceptable to me. I want to apologize to all members of our team, former players, and their families for the pain and discomfort that has been caused over the last 2 days. Black lives matter to me. Our players matter to me. These meetings with our team have been eye-opening and will result in positive changes for Oklahoma State football. I sincerely hope the Oklahoma State family, near and far, will accept my humble apology as we move forward.
And Mike Gundy's wearing of that OAN shirt and the disruption that it caused with the players on the team and how they felt about it is what everybody's talking about. What everybody's talking about is brought to you by 303 Touchless Sealant for the ultimate protection and shine in no time. First and foremost, Junior, you brought this up. As far as the verbiage of that apology from Mike Gundy, perfect.
The college football machines are learning. I was always very critical of everyone's inability to just script a well-crafted apology in this day and age when so many people in sports tend to do so. I was almost getting ready to leave the show and go into consulting for that because it really is easy if you just sit down and think about what's going to happen when this is read. So bravo to whoever wrote that. Right. I don't know if we buy it because we don't know Mike Gundy personally enough to know it doesn't. If it takes two times, you probably don't believe it all that much to where it was going to come naturally, but at the very least, it's well written.
Yeah, it was well written. Everybody will talk about the delivery of it.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what we do. We parse out apologies and we say, okay, was that sincere or not? But again, what is everybody looking for this of is not so much the words now, because if nothing else, the low bar to cross that we've talked about is to say the right thing.
Yeah.
But then it's like, okay, do you believe that person? And B, is there actual change that is going to happen? And one of the things I look for, and I search a lot for it, because you saw it a lot again in the Dabo Swinney stuff, is I look for other players coming in and supporting the coach or supporting one side or the other. You know, like we saw with Dabo, with all the players coming in and supporting him. I haven't seen that here. We haven't seen it in some of the instances. We didn't see it with Kirk Ferentz in Iowa. And we're not seeing it in this situation here. Now, do maybe some don't want to speak up and do that because they feel that's on the wrong side? I don't know. But we certainly saw it with Dabo. I mean, players, you know, by the droves came out
Correct. In
supporting him. And so those are the little things I look for. Did he get any support? And then, of course, in time is going to tell, where does this thing go?
Listen, he in both the videos, he talked about change is coming. We'll see what that change is. I don't know Mike Gundy personally. You know, I remember him as a player. Obviously, I remember him 12 years ago. I'm a man. I'm 40. Come at me. All this kind of stuff. I guess my only question in him saying, I understand now that I don't condone what this network was saying. How did you, as a man over 50, say in April, I stumbled upon this channel and I found it so refreshing. There's no opinion. There's no left. There's no right. They just report the news. So clearly he is a consumer of the product. How can you then say now, I didn't realize what they were about? That's the part I'm having a hard time with. Like, if you believe that, hey man, be all in.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, if that's where, that's fine. The problem I have as a competent sentient being at the age, over the age of 50, how can you say, this is the greatest channel of all time. I like watching it. I think they're great. And then because one of your players got mad, you suddenly realize, oh, now I see? I'm having a hard time with that one.
Yeah. So I think the problem starts to
be about it.
Well, the problem starts when people try and sell us on the idea of, I had this realization overnight and now I'm different, because that's not believable. Again, we're all adults who have reasons that our opinions have formed over time. And so breaking those isn't an overnight process ever on this one. The bare minimum we want to see on these is, are you willing to use this as a starting point? Are you willing to do actual concrete things off it? Like, that's the follow up we need to continue to look for and ask for here is, what are you going to do about this when it's all said and done on this? Because for him to come out, like, this is, you know what, honestly, like, this is exactly out of the playbook of what we saw with Drew Brees.
It's exactly where I was going to go. Right.
Botch the first apology, go out, bring out a second apology that you think is more sincere and at the very least addresses more of what's going on and what was at hand in the situation. And what we said with Drew Brees was, well, we're going to have to wait and see. It's the people in the locker room who are really going to be the ones he's got to win in all of this.
And that did happen there.
Well, I mean, but it did. So yeah. What I'm saying is Mike Gundy needs the president to tweet at him now and to be able to actually show the stuff, because Drew got to do that in much more real time because of a unique situation that presented itself. In lieu of the president tweeting at Mike Gundy and Mike Gundy tweeting back at the president in the next few days here, Mike's not going to have that same ability to show people that he's about it in such a short amount of time. And so it's going to have to be a longer process, which means, and Chuba Hubbard put out another statement saying, I had to hold my coach accountable. That's going to have to be something that continues to happen, is people are going to have to continue to look back at this situation, shine a light on it, and hold Mike Gundy accountable for saying, and he is the one that got up and said it. He might have said it at the, you know, behest of the rest of the athletic department there, who's like, so this is going to hurt recruiting a lot. Yeah. And Oklahoma is already getting all the good players in the state to come and play with them. And so what we're going to need you to do, like, I'm almost surprised they didn't mention the recruits by name in this, because that's going to be a factor going forward. But no, it's going to have to be, in lieu of that one chance to show you're about it, you're going to have to prove it along the way. You're going to have to demonstrate the change that you mentioned.
Yeah, and time will tell on people coming in. We had Marcus Spears on, and he mentioned, you know, if as far as recruitment, players are a lot smarter today than they've been.
Absolutely.
And with what's going on, how much more research will they do? Some may not, and some may, though. Some may look more into it and say, you know what, I'm not going to be about that. I hear what other players, the chatter there, so I may look elsewhere. That's something, a lot of this we're going to find out in time.
Because that part is about the general way you are treated. And again, for people that want to make this about just a shirt, it's misguided. What people have in large part talked about and what we've seen the other players come out with is, you don't see what happens behind the scenes. All of these instances are about the day-to-day treatment that is the root of what is a symptom shown in a shirt, in something that incites this kind of public anger. It's just giving them an excuse to say, this is kind of what we've been dealing with and we haven't liked it.
Which is why you've heard from former Oklahoma State running back Justice Hill, now with the Ravens, and A.J. Green, now with the Cleveland Browns, the wide receiver. And once again, much like Major League Baseball players flipping the script, Junior, you put it best. And you haven't been out of the game that long. It's remarkable how much power these college players
really
and
is.
These athletes have when they choose to use it. And that's what Chuba Hubbard did, and we'll see if real change does indeed come to Oklahoma State. Coming up, anybody that goes to the bubble campus for the NBA in Orlando won't have to worry about a height requirement to get on a ride, but there are many other requirements they're going to have to deal with, and it is incredible in detail. We'll get to all of that after this.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, no doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
One, two, three, four.
And they're going to put on NBA basketball starting at the end of this month. Everybody's heading to Disney World and the bubble/resort setup that they have down there. Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. And the memo, we can't call it a memo. We got to come up with a new,
name.
The guidelines, the rules, the, what do you want, the pamphlet?
Pamphlets. Hey, it's not a pamphlet. Yeah, it's not a pamphlet. You can like trifold the pamphlet usually pretty comfortably.
113 pages is at minimum a book, right? It's got to be a book. The book of rules and regulations.
Memo, the definition of memo is a written message, especially in business. So I guess it doesn't give a length, so I guess you could call it a memo.
Is it like a thesis?
Yes, or a dissertation?
Because wasn't it what Martin Luther nailed that 95 thesis to the door or whatever it was?
Oh yeah, the doctrine.
I was gonna say maybe this is a doctrine.
Let's call it a doctrine. This is the NBA doctrine.
They nailed this to the front door of Disney World and said, "Here's our doctrine."
Put it in front of the moose. The park's closed. Need a moose out front. Should have told you.
Need a big nail to nail all that.
So, that's the cool. Part. Yeah. You get to use one of those big carpenter nails. Yeah. Like
just use the nail gun.
No, you
can't. No nail gun, man. I want like one of those big old metal.
Like a spike.
Yeah,
basically.
Let's beat it in there with a mallet.
So if nothing else, we as a show unit have accomplished this today. It is not a memo. It's a doctrine. And it will be nailed to the front of Disney World with a spike.
Forever known on this show, Golic and Wingo, as the doctrine of the NBA. Yeah. Spiked to the door.
The doctrine of NBA return is decided.
Yay, henceforth, now and forever.
It's Jerry. Time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless.
We've got Jerry's bit right there.
Get to work
on it. Get to work on the doctrine. We're excited about it. It is incredible. I mean, just really, before we get into the actual things that matter, some of the stuff in there, kudos to our NBA insiders like
Holy smokes.
Dave McMenamin for parsing through this thing. For example, how to clean the basketball is amazing. To properly and thoroughly clean and disinfect basketballs after each use, teams should engage in the following procedure recommended by Spalding. Mix a quarter teaspoon of dishwasher detergent per gallon of water. With a clean cloth or towel, wipe down the basketball with the dish detergent and water mix. Further wipe down the basketball with water alone. Allow the basketballs to air dry. Once dry, spray the basketball with an EPA-approved disinfectant. That's for every basketball.
And then immediately it gets sweated on in the first 10 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, what are they doing at every change of possession?
It is crazy the level of detail that's gone into this, because the reason we're calling it a doctrine and joking about it is this document has outlined pretty much every part of what life inside we'll call it the campus environment so no one gets mad, is going to look like in almost every form and facet.
So the players won't really care about that. Here, what will the players care about? What can we do and where are we going to be? So here's a few of the things there. They're staying three different places. One of the towers at the Coronado Springs Resort, the Grand Floridian Resort and Spa. Who's staying there?
Yeah.
And the Yacht Club Resort, one which I know we have
rock
been
solid.
As well.
Yacht Club, rock solid.
Yeah, I have not been in the Grand
Coronado Towers.
I have not been in that one. I've been in the Floridian and the Yacht Club. But again, how many, you know, who the Grand Floridian, those villas. Let me tell you.
Tasty.
That's some sweet stuff.
Choice. So I see what you did there. That's some sweet stuff. S-U-I-T-E.
Gotta be, I didn't even think of that, okay, maybe I did.
Bum, bum, bum.
The Lakers and the Bucks at least there, right? There's gonna be a players only lounge that includes TV, arcades, gaming, access to NBA 2K, and that what Trey said before. There will be ping pong. However, no doubles in ping pong. Until directed otherwise by the NBA, players should play singles only so they can maintain 6 feet of distance. You have a 24-hour VIP concierge be available to the players. Movie screenings, DJ sets. Each team will have a dedicated Disney culinary team. They have their own chef.
Yeah.
to make meals. They get 3 meals a day, 4 on game days. If you do test positive, you get isolated in housing where nobody else is going to be, and they have all of it for that. But you can do excursions to do fishing, yoga,
golf,
and other activities like that. You know, I know you're in one spot, but you know, this sounds
like the ultimate bro down.
Yeah. Well,
a lot of people talked about it. Sounded like a lot of the Nike summer basketball camps that people go to. For me personally, it sounds like the suite at bowl games. Like when you go to a bowl game as a team in college football and you get to your hotel, usually you have hospitality suites or something like this, areas sectioned off just for you where you can do a lot of these things. Now, these activities are a little greater in number because obviously the price tag on all of this is up, but for some of these guys, it might feel restrictive. And Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, was on the SE special on Monday
right.
and said, It sounds funny to say in light of everything we just read, but part of this is going to be about sacrifice.
I mean, we're dealing with extraordinary circumstances. I mean, I think people, not that anybody's forgetting, but this is incredibly unique circumstance. And what we're trying to do has never been done before, as far as I know, to find a way, you know, to create our own sense of normality through all these incredibly difficult societal forces. And so, as I said, sacrifice in terms of the amount of turnaround, sacrifice in terms of how these players, coaches, referees, and others will be living on this campus, that's all going to be part of this. And I don't want to sugarcoat it. And yes, will the turnaround be faster and quicker than normal? Absolutely.
So what's also interesting here is once you arrive in Orlando, unlike the Hotel California, you can leave.
Yes.
You know, you are allowed to look it up, kids.
You can check out anytime you like.
But you can never leave.
Well done.
You can leave if you want, but if you do, you are then subject to a 10 to 14 day self-quarantine period. And if you miss games during that, you won't get paid for those games. Some of the approved excuses to leave the campus would be team directed medical care off campus, birth of a child, a documented severe illness or death in the family, or a previously scheduled family wedding. Those are approved ways to leave the campus. So basically, once you check in there, you can leave if you want on your own. If you want to go take a day and go somewhere, you can. But then when you come back, you're going to be quarantined for 10 to 14 days and miss all that time and miss games. So I don't know why anybody's going to be doing it.
Bad value prop there.
Yeah, it really would. Well, I mean, are we going to be like the teenage kids here? Are people going to try and sneak off?
Honestly, probably.
Listen, they're competitive. Someone's always going to try and game the system, right?
That's
always, you have to account for that. The other things that are really interesting in there is that, you know, if you choose not to go, and the NBA is saying you don't have to go if you don't want to.
And again, a week from today, you have to make your intention known as a player if you are going to go or not.
If you don't go, you will lose 192nd of your pay for every game that you miss.
Right.
But the other part that I thought
was, but you won't be penalized other than that.
No, you won't. There's no. Yeah,
it's just monetary.
Correct. You're not playing. You're not
just
getting
a
paid.
Game check.
It's just
that's
that simple.
It, right.
But the other part of this I thought was really interesting, because for all the things that we talk about, it sounds like, you know, this great, you know, bro weekend, all that kind of stuff. It is a long time.
It is.
And there's going to be some mental health issues. And one of the more interesting parts of this, I thought, was where it says teams are encouraged to bring a mental health professional with their travel party. That travel party is going to be 37 people, basically, including the players and support staff, PR people, and a content creator. If they choose not to bring a mental health professional, teams must make telehealth appointments available, particularly if, quote, any player experiences increased feelings of anxiety and stress upon transitioning to the campus and being away from household family members, end quote. And I think that's significant, because we have had a couple of players over the last few years in the NBA, Kevin Love among them and DeMar DeRozan, basically come out and say, yeah, I've had some mental health issues.
Yeah.
And the acknowledgement by the NBA that that is going to be a part of this, I think is really, really interesting.
Well, so I think that's important, and I think that's actually makes a lot of sense in light of the other conversation we're going to have around all of this, which are the growing coalition of players that are looking at what the implications of this in regards to social justice are going to be, because I think that might be at the heart of this. And I'll let Malika Andrews speak first, our ESPN NBA reporter who was on with us yesterday and who went on SportsCenter and outlined just what exactly the NBA's players coalition that is growing around players like Kyrie Irving and others in here, Avery Bradley among them, of what their goals are going into this process.
So Avery Bradley, who is one of the leaders of that players coalition, told Adrian Wojnarowski and I exactly what it is that they are hoping to have come to light today. So it's three things. One, he said, we would like to see an improvement in hiring practices for black coaches, black general managers, black presidents, because they want to see the decision makers of the league better reflect the racial makeup of the players. Secondly, they would like to see the league work more with black business owners and black vendors. And then thirdly, they would like to see more financial donations, like from what we've seen from Mark Cuban and Michael Jordan, to organizations that serve black people. And so he said today, Avery said, look, I support the people who want to go to Orlando and want to use that platform. What I would like is for help from our owners, because that will make our message more impactful.
And so I think it's the level of clarity that's been displayed on that front that you talked about with mental health, certainly with all the other plans that have gone along in this 100-page document are, all right, what are your plans and what are the actionable steps you're going to show us if we go forward with this bubble or otherwise?
This again, Avery Bradley telling ESPN, regardless of how much media coverage will be received, talking and raising awareness about social injustice isn't enough. Are we that self-centered to believe no one in the world is aware of racism right now? That as athletes, we solve the real issue by using our platform to speak. We don't need to say anymore. We need to find a way to achieve more. Protesting during an anthem, wearing T-shirts is great, but we need to see real action being put in the works. Now, the NBA and the Players Association have talked about these things and are addressing these things, but no plans have been made. And then there's the two sides of, you know, from that side of it saying, okay, if you don't want to play and you want to continue on with this because you don't want to lose the momentum, that's fair. Others are saying, hey, we'll have a huge platform down in Orlando. We'll have the media in front of us every single day to keep this going, to keep talk and putting maybe money toward actionable things going on. And then there's the economic side where, who was it? It was Ed Davis from the Utah Jazz saying, listen, it's easy for guys that have generational wealth and a lot of money to say, we don't need to go. You know, there are the social injustice side of it, and there is the financial side of it. I know everybody thinks that every professional athlete is set for life, but they do make a lot of money, but they're not. And, you know, they make more than most, don't get me wrong, but within the realm of that sport, there are those that don't make nearly as much as others. And that's what Ed Davis is saying. There are financial implications to other players, not those that who can sit out. And because they're, you know, as he said, Dwight Howard can sit in his $20 million mansion. A lot of us can't do something like that. So there is the financial aspect of that as well.
Yeah, it is an admirable notion to sacrifice everything in the name of your cause. And I don't dispute Kyrie Irving's sincerity when he said the idea of I'm willing to give it all up after you've already made as much as he's had. It's a lot easier to say that than when you're in, as Amin Al-Hassan also pointed out, I heard audio of him on our air saying, if you're, you know, a guy who's a 10-day contract, a two-way contract, a guy who's on a rookie scale, still in a lot of this one, you're in a different place in your life. And I understand, because one of the other arguments that Ed made was, well, you know what? Us having money to pour back into our surrounding communities is very valuable. And I get it shouldn't all fall on black people to be the ones to help out their communities and do all of these things. And that's where ownership comes into it and their role in this and what they believe the involvement should be, both in a financial sense and in their words and what they choose to support publicly.
And to that point, Kyle Korver, who, of course, is a white player, was on SportsCenter IG Live with Richard Jefferson. The two were teammates in Cleveland.
And he's with the Bucks. He's with the top ranked team in the league right now.
In Milwaukee right now with a team that is considered to be the favorite to win the championship. This is what he had to say about whether or not he was going to play and why the reasons he may or may not go.
If my black teammates and friends and brothers feel like the best way to go about real change is to not play, I stand with them. I'm okay with that. Right. If we think that is the best way for change, I care more about change happening than a championship. On the other side, I am on a team that feels like we could win and I have never won. I would like to win. Is there a way to do both? I think there's a conversation there, but kind of go back to your saying, like I'm going to follow the lead of my black brothers and teammates on this and I stand with them and whatever they want to do, that's what I want to do.
Because there is that side of it. There is a championship there, and they don't have to be mutually exclusive to try and win a championship and still try and create change. It's almost like some players are made to maybe feel bad and not speak up about wanting to play and try and win a championship because it feels so down the list of the social change battle that's going on right now. It's like they almost Kyle did talk about it, but I do think there are some players that say, you know, this is our sport, what we do. We feel we can still help with what's going on outside of ball, but, man, we can win a championship as well. And that's something real as well.
But I think the most important thing for him is, like, I'm not going to be the defender on this.
Right.
I mean, that was the most interesting thing about him. He's like, yeah, because he's been there with the Cavs a couple of times and lost. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, I want to win, but I need to understand, as so many people said, I need to listen to what they're saying. I'm going to go with their lead on this because that's the thing that hasn't happened for so long.
Yeah, so there are three prongs that make this up. There's competitive, financial, and moral. Like, yeah, those right, are all yes. the things that are baked into this process. And it's certainly, I think what it's going to be is honestly taking their cue from what we heard out of the WNBA as they're getting ready to resume play in all this. And we heard from NECA and Ngumike yeah. and a couple of others in this who are basically, for lack of a better term, said it's going to be everyone's decision of how they come to this, if they come to this, or if they want to sit out to make a point about this, do the things that they feel are necessary to keep furthering change. But it seems that they have found already amongst their discussions with themselves, with the league, with the WNBA PA, that, all right, this is our comfort level with this. I think that's what we're going to end up seeing with the NBA, because we mentioned with all of those things going into decision making, it's going to be hard to reach any one true consensus in that, I think.
Mike, I think you're an interesting case study here because you played on a very good Eagles team.
Right.
Never got where you thought the talent could be. In this situation, how would you have waited?
I think I would have done it with Kyle Korver way. I would have leaned on our guys in the locker room, you know, who I can already tell would have been, you know, going forward. Now, I'm not saying they would have said to play, but listening to the Seth Joyners of the world, the Jerome Browns of the world, the Reggie Whites of the world, you know, the Clyde Simmons of the world, you know, so I think Eric Allen. I mean, there's so many on our team, that were just really very active in the communities. Anyone who have been very active in this, I would have, and I was, and again, this was before free agency where you're with these guys all the time. I was great friends with these guys, let alone teammates with them. I would have without question followed, just like Kyle said, kind of followed their lead. And part of it would have been the discussion of, man, we also have a chance if it was the roles reversed here to win a Super Bowl. You know, so can...
Right, I mean,
so,
I feel like you and Korver are kind of similar, you know what I mean?
Oh, well, we're kind of a role player type of a situation. Absolutely. So there is that side of it, because that's what you do work for that championship. So I don't think, again, I would lean on them more to their... But I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think a lot of players feel they could do things in Orlando and help and still try and win a championship. But again, you'd have to lean on what most would say.
I think it's important that there's both groups. And you can even go back to when this happened with the NFL, which was there was Eric Reed and Colin Kaepernick and the Players Coalition. Those groups did not get along,
by the way.
While they were aimed in similar directions, they did not get along because there were some ideological differences, mostly centered around Colin and people going to bat for him in the mind of Eric Reed. But both felt necessary. Like, you needed the one side to continue to drive, to continue to push people in the way that Eric and Colin did. And you also needed the Players Coalition to kind of bridge the gap, to push for the things they've pushed and do the work that they've done. It feels like you can get a similar vibe here where there's guys in the bubble in Orlando that feel like they can use that platform to help. And there might be a group of guys that decides that they're best served to be back at home, to be in their communities, to be doing the things outside of that world.
So the week from today, they have to know.
Right.
Realistically, how many players do you think may opt out?
I have no way to gauge that.
I really don't either.
I mean, I'm really curious and fascinated by that.
Because it's just going to be how big of names and from what – I think it's going to be who and what teams that matter more than how many.
To go back to maybe a little bit of a lighter side of this, I do know some things you'll never hear from some players. Yeah. We brought this up a little while ago when the thought of how long they were going to be down there after being quarantined for so long, and some of these guys that have young kids, and all of a sudden – they're going to Disney World alone and not have to be with the, you know, in that house anymore.
Yeah.
And they might, you know, they might enjoy the time away. I remember we talked about it on that show. I walked upstairs and my wife said, "You would have liked that, wouldn't you?"
Yeah.
Cause I was playing and the boys were young. I'm like, she goes, "You'd have been fishing and golfing every day. You didn't have a game." Yeah. I said, maybe I would have.
Listen, all of this is fair. All of this is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. So coming up next, as we continue here on Golic and Wingo, facing Lamar Jackson was clearly no day at the beach in 2019, but will the story change in 2020? We will get to that and some other very interesting NFL topics you need to hear about. Golic and Wingo with you on a Wednesday morning, ESPN Radio, also on ESPN2, Sirius XM Channel 80, and smart speakers everywhere.
They're so smart.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security. Is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. Very interesting where that went.
Harry Lyles Jr. Harry, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate your time. What has been your ability to gauge the situation in Oklahoma State and everything that's going on in Stillwater? What are you hearing about how the players have dealt with Mike Gundy now and the apologies and the meetings that have followed?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. You know, as far as, like, the players, I think, you know, and you had mentioned there that Gundy had not apologized initially, and, you know, the logistics of that didn't look great because Hubbard, you know, it almost came off as if he was apologizing for tweeting and speaking out, you know, which I think we can all agree is just not acceptable, at least for this particular situation. But, you know, it's going to be really difficult. I mean, like, you know, I believe it was Howard Bryant who had mentioned, like, you know, it looked like Gundy was part of another hostage video, you know, clearly, like, he was reading something there, and that doesn't necessarily mean he's not genuine, but I do think that, you know, there's a lot of summer left this year. People are going to see that a lot of their favorite college football coaches might not be, you know, as I guess, like, socially aware as they might have thought. And I think this is one of those things where, you know, even if you do think that the apology was good and genuine and things like that, like, this is one of those things that he's probably just not going to be able to live down, whether that's with his current team or in recruiting in the future.
And I think recruiting in the future is a large part of why we've seen two videos up until this point. But, Harry, how surprised have you been about the response from, and maybe even outside of just this situation, former players starting to speak up on behalf of what's going on in a lot of these programs?
You know, I think what you're seeing right now in college football is very similar to the just unrest and honestly just anger that you're seeing from Black Americans right now. Just because it's like, you know, for a very long time and in many different places and ways, Black people are always just kind of like trying to, you know, get along, right? Get to the next thing. Things are good enough. We're just trying to make it every single day being Black in America. And I think now a lot of these players are starting to see, like, hey, like, we made these schools a lot of money. Like, we were not treated well. I didn't. And, you know, in some cases too, you have to think about this. Like, I do think that in certain moments, some guys didn't realize that they were being treated poorly. And now that they're starting to see, like, hey, a lot of these current players are using their platform and voice and it's working, you have the other guys coming in from behind them being like, oh, yeah, no, they're right. Treat them better. And honestly, it's really been a joy to see. And I think a way, too, that even beyond, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, you're going to start seeing college players starting to get some of the stuff that they deserve.
Along those lines, as ESPN college football reporter Harry Lyles joining us here on Golic and Wingo, I guess we're looking now for the action. We saw in Clemson the name taken off of a college, of a part of the college. We had Texas A&M, they're looking for the removal of a statue. In Iowa, we saw a strength coach lose his job for things that he had done that didn't seem to be disputed by any former players. Have we heard anything at Oklahoma State about what players or what actionable things they are looking for at this point?
You know, at least, and this is very interesting because the T-shirt is bad, and right? And the T-shirt, it's not necessarily, I mean, it is the network, but it's what that entire thing stands for, right? Because they call the Black Lives Matter movement a farce. So the bigger issue is all the other things that are going on behind the scenes that we don't totally know about yet. I know that there were a couple of other players who used to play for the program. I know one had recently transferred out that, you know, had talked about, you know, just stereotypes that were said or used against them. And so those are the kind of the systematic changes that are going to have to go behind the doors, of each program and change? Because they're all separate cases, right? Like, your experience at UCLA is not going to be the same as your experience at Ohio State or Ole Miss or Miami or whatever the case may be. But a lot of it, honestly, is going to take a lot of looking in the mirror for a lot of these college football coaches, especially the white college football coaches, and being like, okay, how can we be better for our players? How can we be more inclusive, and how can we be more welcoming? And I think that is a much, much bigger deal than simply a bad T-shirt.
Yeah, Harry Lyles Jr. with us. You're exactly right. It's one thing for the players to sort of flex the power that they realize they have now. It's another thing for coaches who, let's be honest, coaches are usually pretty rigid individuals, especially coaches that have been someplace for a long time and have had some success, for them to adopt the model or change the way that they've found their success. To me, that's the most fascinating part of this, which coaches who have been around at one place and are somewhat legendary at that place, like Mike Gundy, who was a quarterback at Oklahoma State long before he was a coach there. How are they willing, and can they be willing, to adjust the thing that has been successful for them for so long?
No, without a doubt. And the thing is, too, here, there are a lot of cultural differences in America, and I think that scares people sometimes, but it really is okay. And I think a lot of these coaches are going to figure that out because, like, look, you can't change who – well, I mean, you could change who you are, but you can't change, like, where you're from and the things that you've learned – but you can adapt to the people around you. And I think, you know, whether that's in college football or in life in general, like, you should be willing and wanting to do that, right? Like, if we're all genuinely good people, we would want to understand each other. We would want equality. So, you know, I think that is a prime example in Clemson's situation, right? Because Dabo Swinney grew up in Alabama. He was not wealthy. You know, he was sharing a bed with his mother when he was in college. So all he knows is, all right, well, if I work hard and I, you know, I become successful, then anybody can do it, because that's all he's ever seen. However, that's just not true the way that things are built right now in the United States. And I think that's okay to admit. And I think once more people are starting to realize, like, hey, my way is not the only way, that's when we'll start making progress.
Harry, I'm curious, you mentioned recruiting earlier on in this and the prospect of change like this. There will be some coaches that have a more difficult time with it. Do you think we'll see it reflected in recruiting, where players making their college decisions start to take things like this more into account?
I really do think that in the next 2 to 3 years, we're going to start to see a little shift, just because, especially, it's, you know, people have been saying it's different this time within the Black Lives Matter movement. And I think you're going to start to see, whether it's the kids or their parents or a combination of both, be like, hey, like, is this actually the best environment for this student athlete to be in? And I think that that question, you know, while that's not to say that it wasn't important before, I definitely think that you're going to see the importance of that raised for many more players, as it, you know, wouldn't have been before, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's probably the, as we go forward, in addition to the tangible changes that each athletic department makes, some of the initiatives they choose to support, it's going to see that response from a group that has now been so empowered in all of this. Harry, we appreciate the time. Great article up on .com right now for everyone that wants to check it out on this situation with Mike Gundy and the Oklahoma State players. Harry, appreciate the time, man.
Guys, thanks for having me on.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
We're delighted to be joined by our NBA analyst and former head coach in the NBA, Jeff Van Gundy. Jeff, we appreciate your time this morning. And I was listening to you about a week ago on Spain and Company, and I thought you made some really interesting points as a head coach. Before we get into any of the protocols and all that kind of stuff, which is remarkably detailed and intricate, but just the struggles of a head coach in this environment. You said something on that show, how am I going to keep my players engaged? That's a real challenge for a head coach with this sort of quarantine situation they're facing, right?
Oh, without question. If you look at the championship caliber teams having to be there 3 months. I don't know about you guys, but I was going nuts in semi-quarantine at home for this amount of time. So just imagine what these teams are going to go through, where you're not allowed, think about it, no family, no friends, no chances for fun and absolutely no familiarity, their lifestyle is going to be changed 100%. You know, they're used to staying in Ritz-Carltons, coming and going as they please, flying on charter jets, and now you're going to be at Disney in hotels with very little, from what I understand, flexibility to live a normal life. It's going to be a huge challenge.
Jeff, now let's remember, as Disney employees, these resorts are fantastic.
They're wonderful.
They're going to be staying. They are going to be staying in three different resorts, all the teams. And to your point,
the average person, yes, but these guys are not average. They're not expecting average. As far as they're expecting, their just whole lifestyle.
Yeah.
It's just, as you know, Mike, it's just different. It's just, you know, and you combine everything that they're going to have to try to navigate. And I don't care how many pool tables you bring in, ping pong tables, you know, open mic nights, you know, you're going to have to think of all those things, but it's going to be, I am concerned. I think the players are right to be concerned about how restrictive this environment is going to be.
And you mentioned championship teams. There will be four teams that will be there past, I believe it's the 67-day mark. So they'd be pushing on those four teams, the 3 months or more being there. So, Jeff, as far as from a coaching standpoint, you mentioned some of the activities they could do. Would you try to take up more of their time with basketball activities or let them be more? I mean, could you kind of figure which way you may go there?
Yeah, I think that's a tough decision and one you're going to have to read on a day-by-day basis, because they may be bored in the situation. They may even be more irritated by you and you overexerting yourself into their lives for, you know, 3 months. Think about it. Now, when you're on it with a normal team in an NBA, you're going to be around them probably 4 hours a day, you know, practice, meetings, whatever it may be. Game days would be a little bit more, obviously, but this is going to be where you're going to, you know, run into people on their off, what would normally be their off hours. And I just remember this from Summer League in Vegas. We were there for Vegas, you know, all these opportunities to have fun. You're there probably 2 weeks and you can't wait to get home. I mean, you're dying to lose in the Vegas Summer League, so you're ousted, so you can go home.
And I'm sure there's going to be some guys, especially the ones on the teams that don't think
right, have a chance.
That's what we've heard of, is a lot of the teams that believe they're on the fringe and might not have a chance in all this. But Jeff, we've also heard from players like Kyrie Irving and others that have started to voice concerns about the effect that they can have on the current, movement for social justice in the world going into this. If you're a coach right now, what is your communication like with your players on this subject?
Well, I think you do have to be in constant communication. I think that's normal, though, that you're going to have things crop up and have to address. And I think the more directly you confront it, this is a little bit different in that you can't get everybody together at once, so you're having to do it individually. I think it makes it more challenging to keep everybody knowing what everybody else thinks. You know, because the conversations can't flow naturally back and forth between multiple members. But it's something certainly you have to address. And I think every coach is going to have to understand some players may be unwilling to play for any different reason. I don't think you can become too judgmental on those reasons. And then secondarily, some players may have that do come because they want to collect their money, may have different levels of enthusiasm for participating. And that's where, as far as a coach, you either want somebody completely in or completely out. You know, if you don't feel like you can give it your all, that's fine. But you can't have guys half-stepping and expect to be successful.
Jeff Van Gundy with us. So Jeff, there's so many moving parts to this. And again, you've talked about how you keep the players engaged. I mean, the NBA is encouraging each team to bring a mental health professional as part of their traveling party or have telehealth conferences available to these players. You know, and when I look at all the things that are going on, and some people are like, well, it's just going to be a run-up to this ridiculous false premise of a championship, I think it's actually going to be way more difficult to win the championship in this environment than would in a regular run to the finals where you have, like you said, the luxury that they're used to, the travel that they're used to, the off days between games in the postseason that you normally have. All of that is going to be so condensed, you could make a very compelling argument this might be the most difficult championship to win.
Yeah, I think, to me, guys, this is like a different season. I think, for me, the 19 and 20 NBA season is over. This is totally different. This, all you're bringing from the 19 and 20 season is your roster and your record. Other than that, everything is different. I don't think you can think that there's going to be carryover. You don't know. You don't know differing health issues. Some teams may have improved with the time off to get their health back in order. Others may have sustained an injury that we don't know about or have dealt with the coronavirus and are a little bit compromised. So this is different. As you said, it's completely different. To me, this is 2020 Summer League. This is going to be like this extended Summer League championship with incredible amount of obstacles in each team's way. And I am going to be very much interested in how the teams navigate it. I hope we have cameras behind the scenes following all this. I think it would be a fascinating documentary because I don't even think the coaches or the players can totally picture what they're about to go through.
Yeah, I mean, in each one of the traveling parties, there's going to be a content creator there. Yeah. I think for that specific reason, we may be having an NBA season and creating one of the best 30 for 30s at all times simultaneously. Jeff, we appreciate your insight, your experience, and your thoughts on this. Be well, be safe, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Okay, take care, guys.
Golic
makes me want to vomit and then punch you square in the face.
And Wingo.
Oh, he's saucy today. Major League Baseball insider extraordinaire and the man who can shoot a football through a basketball hoop from 100 feet away like it was nothing. Saw that on SportsCenter the other night. My God, it was incredible. Jeff Passan joins us. So, Jeff, before we get into the suck fest, because we were in the deal zone for a moment, but we're still on the suckometer here, tell me about how this whole thing of you shooting a football through a basketball hoop from 100 feet away, how did that all happen?
Okay, so this goes back to college. I was the sports editor at the Daily Orange at Syracuse, and a freshman named Chris Snow walks in through the door. And you know when you run into talented people, you just get it. And I worked with Snow for a few years when we were in college, and he goes, and at 24 years old, he's a beat writer for the Boston Globe covering the Red Sox. And he had covered hockey before that and gets recruited to be the assistant GM as a 24-year-old of a hockey team. And Chris has been in hockey for the last 15 years. He's the AGM with the Calgary Flames right now. And unfortunately, a year ago, he was diagnosed with ALS. His family has had a terrible history with ALS. He's lost multiple family members, and he is fighting the very good fight. And his wife, Kelsey, came up with this idea to do hashtag trick shot for Snowy. And so Chris asked me to do a trick shot, and there was a basketball hoop across the street in my neighbor's yard, and I'm like, you know what, let's see if I can do this. And so the first time that I did it was a couple days ago, and it took me 32 tries to go from 32 yards. And I felt like I was actually doing okay. And afterward, I challenge a couple of people. And before I tweet it out, I just want to let them know, hey, I'm going to be challenging you guys. And one of them says, nah, I'm not going to do that. So I have to start from scratch. So I moved. I'm like, you know what? If I can do it from 32 yards, that's 96 feet. Let's make it an even 100 feet. It's over the street. So I'm on the sidewalk this time as opposed to in the middle of the street. So I go back there and third freaking try.
Wow.
Just absolutely buckets. And
it was amazing.
I wanted so badly to dance, to scream, to act like I was feeling on the inside. But I'm like, nah, just act like you can do it every day. No, I could be. No shot. It was blind luck. But as long as I know a lot of listeners are out there, it's ALS Awareness Month in Canada right now. And Chris and Kelsey and their family have done a wonderful job of raising money for ALS research. So please go to Snowy Strong, SNOWYStrong.ca, and donate if you can, or do a trick shot for Snowy. I'm going to say this right now. If you hashtag trick shot for Snowy and put it on Twitter, I will see it, and the best trick shot in the next week will get a signed copy of my book, The Arm. And I want to do so much for a really good person and for a really good cause. So thank you for allowing me these 2 minutes to talk about it.
That is very cool.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, that was awesome.
It's a great story. It's for a great cause.
Hell yeah.
And you used a football and a basketball net. You had nothing to do with baseball there. So
I don't want anything to do with baseball.
I know. Unfortunately, we have to transition.
I'm so sorry.
Off of that great story and your perseverance of 32 attempts at 32 feet to try and make it. Where is
yards,
baseball?
Sport? Yards, Mike. Don't
yards,
tell me that's
yards.
Short.
I'm sorry. 32 yards. So you showed some perseverance there. Where is baseball's perseverance? Is it going to come into play at all during the next however many days they need before they need to get this thing done?
I think they needed to get this thing done a month ago, and that's the most frustrating part of it all, that where we are right now with MLB's acknowledgement that the players are going to be paid their full prorated share is what we should have been at this whole time. And I understand that the owners are trying to get a discount from the players. I get that, but you got to read the room. And yeah, it's been a long time now since the room showed you they weren't budging. And if they're not budging, then your job, your imperative as the stewards of the game, which the owners are, because they're the ones who have had clubs in family hands for, you know, decades upon decades. They're the ones who are going to pass down these teams to their family. They're the ones who are around for a long time when MLB careers are extraordinarily finite. I mean, the average career, 3.5 to 4 years, not very long that a player is going to be around. So it's on the owners to bring baseball back. And when Rob Manfred says the owners 100% want to play, show me your work, man. Like, have an owner come out and say, I 100% want to play. Have all 30 owners come out and say that, because there's an extreme amount of skepticism behind the scenes whether that's actually true, whether they have the owners' votes to just shut down the season. And that is the thing that scares me at this point. Listen, I'm still optimistic because I look at what happens if a season gets shut down and think that a shutdown season this year leads to 3 years potentially without baseball. And if you want me to explain that, I can, because it is a grim scenario.
Yeah, I mean, let's walk all the way into the darkness.
In layman's terms, as best you can, Jeff.
Let's do this. I'll be very quick about this. If you lose the 2020 season, you haven't played baseball since October of 2019. 2021 season is going to be even more difficult because you have the anger that 20 was shut down, because you have players who are going to be even more entrenched in their positions, because you have owners who are fearful that there are not going to be revenues from tickets, or not nearly as many revenues from tickets as they're used to, are going to want to shut the whole damn thing down again. And you're going to have labor rancor like we haven't seen since, I'm not even going to say since 1994, like we've never seen. Wow. That labor rancor could potentially scuttle the 2021 season. Then collective bargaining agreement expires, so nobody has, you know, any reason to bring it back at that point. You'd be looking at a lockout, and who knows how long the lockout would last if you've already missed 2 years. I mean, that's something where maybe at that point the players are saying, we haven't gotten paid in a couple of years. We're losing prime years of our career. We got to get something done. But maybe they take the principled stand that they're taking right now, that we are not in the wrong here, that we are the game in terms of in the moment. They may be the stewards of the game. We are the game. And if they are able to show the solidarity going forward that they've shown in this time, we could be looking at a protracted labor war unlike anything that we've seen before. That is the doomsday scenario, guys, and that is what happens if the season is canceled this year.
And that's why we're still in the suck zone, not in the deal zone. Jeff Passan, yeah. Major League Baseball insider with us. But Jeff, I did say I found it somewhat hilarious and cringeworthy when Rob Manfred went on and talked about the union negotiating in bad faith, because when we looked like we were close to a deal, we had the general manager of the Diamondbacks go on a radio station, and just when it seemed like potentially we might have worked this thing out, he decided to throw gas on the fire by saying, well, every other major union is okay with revenue sharing. Why don't we have it? They're all good with it. When in reality, none of them are good with it. It's just what they're forced to deal with. It seemed like the worst possible thing he could have said at that moment.
My problem with that line of argument is one of causation versus correlation. Are those other sports in good positions labor-wise because they share revenues, or are they in good positions labor-wise and they share revenues?
Yes.
Those are two very, very different things. And the MLBPA has existed for 50-plus years now without sharing revenues and without having some sort of a capped system. And that is very important to the organization. And look, this happens every time there is a labor dispute. Someone brings up the idea of a revenue share, of a capped system, of whatever you want to call it. It's not going to get anywhere. It is a purely political position. And while there are absolutely positive elements to the idea of sharing revenues, I don't know how the game itself gets better when you're doing that. I'm sorry, but if you have a salary cap in place, that doesn't make the New York Yankees any less likely to go out and do what they do right now, which is use their giant amounts of money in different areas and excel in them. If they can't spend it on major league payroll, they will spend it in areas like research and development. They'll spend it on scouting. They will find places to spend it. But the product of a capped system, guys, is not that there is greater fairness. It's that there's more money that winds up going to clubs. And hey, if you're somebody who wants billionaires to get richer, I'm cool with that. You can have your political position there. You can have your business sense there. That's all good by me. But I don't know. I still think that in the end, putting a limit on what players can get, what players warrant, is just something that is honestly anti-American.
In a lot of ways, Jeff Passan with us here on Golic and Wingo. Jeff, we've seen from the player side of things, especially in the last couple of days, this real push into tell us when and where. We've seen the retweets. We've seen these guys being active in that. Do you think they've saved themselves any amount of face with the fans and with the public by basically aligning with them, by pointing at Major League ownership and Rob Manfred and saying, we're ready, it's on you?
I don't mean to turn this question on you, but I'm genuinely curious your guys' response. When the players tell us when and where, do you find that to be an effective message?
I find that to be a public swaying message, not to the owners. I don't think it does anything to the owners unless they feel the owners can be swayed by the public perception.
And I think for us, Jeff, I wonder if it's any different for fans that haven't been looking as closely at all of the minutiae of this as we have. That's the only differentiator, I'd say.
See, that's a really interesting point, and one that I probably had not myself thought of, because all I do is spend every day looking at the minutia, but I have found that line of spin, and look, it's true, but it's still spin, to be incredibly effective. It is so simple. It is so relatable. I just want to work. I want to do what I'm great at. I want to do what I love, and you're the ones who are preventing me from doing it. That's something we can all relate to. and something that I think having Mike Trout come out and say it, having Bryce Harper come out and say it, probably the two most visible baseball players there are right now, having Justin Verlander, I mean, all the guys and all the big names are coming out and saying it. And you know the MLBPA is at its strongest when you have the big names. That's how it really took root back in the late 60s. You know, when guys like Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays were on board with it, it was, okay, now we got the big names. You see Max Scherzer being as vocal a presence as anyone in the phone calls that they're having. Gerrit Cole has been outspoken, and people listen to him. There is just a much different vibe with the players right now. And the problem, guys, with owners is it's not just that they're getting beaten on by the players. It's that when they've spoken publicly, they've said things like Major League Baseball doesn't make a whole lot of money and the losses are going to be biblical. Like, the messaging there from the owners has been suboptimal.
That's the nicest way you could have put it.
Yeah.
So I wonder, Jeff, then going forward, because that's what we want. We want to see going forward. Is the next call, and it seems like the ball is in the court of the league now, is the next call to the union, this is the date we're starting, or let's continue to talk about this?
Well, Mike, the last correspondence that we know of between the parties came from Dan Halem, the deputy commissioner, sending a letter to Bruce Meyer, the lead negotiator for the union. So the ball right now is in the union's court, and it'll be interesting to see if the union comes back and says, okay, our last offer was 89 games, we're going to make an offer for you. We feel like, you know, even though we said these negotiations feel like they're at an end, we feel like there's better faith going on right now. And they could theoretically go down to 84 games, 82 games, even maybe 80 games. If they get in the 80 game range, I think there's going to be a deal. I think that is a show of very good faith by the players if they do that. If we're going incrementally, though, it's going to take a little bit longer if there is a deal. And I do, by the way, as Dr. Doomsday as I was earlier, I do think a deal is going to get done. Maybe some of that is optimism, maybe some of that is hope. But there's just a level of pragmatism here that has to be understood by all the parties. And while I know that Rob Manfred answers to owners that they are his boss, I think that there's a duty of any commissioner to ensure that the sport is steered in the right direction. And Rob Manfred is an extraordinarily intelligent man who knows that if there is no baseball played this year, the fallout will be catastrophic.
Yeah, Jeff, I agree with you, because that's my fallback position. I cannot believe at the end of the day they would be dumb enough not to play. I mean, that's just,
you know what, that was
way...
here's the thing though, Trey, that like that was what we thought in 1994 too.
Yeah, fair. Well, now I'm depressed again. All right, go make another trick shot, and we'll all feel better about it. As always, we appreciate your time, my friend. Thanks, Jeff.
We just got
Thank you, boys. No.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.